go to Genesis again, Genesis 6. I was thinking about something this morning that, you know, the different time zones, etc. You know, right now somebody is celebrating Christmas around the world. It's Christmas Eve here. And then I started thinking about how the different cycles of time. I think that every culture that has ever been had a week of 7 days. I remember when we were doing the stars, I looked that up, and I couldn't find any culture for which their week wasn't 7 days. Now, how did that happen? Then most cultures that I know of started off with their year was based on the cycle of the moon, because they recognized early on that the moon had different phases, and anyway, so most cultures their measure of the months was based on the moon, and that also is kind of interesting how this another cycle of time. Then when commerce started to happen, it was too difficult to play with that different, because you always had, you have to catch up and all kinds of stuff. So then they changed to, money cultures changed to the cycle of the sun as that measure of time for a year. As far as I know, the only culture that retained the cycle of the moon was Israel. Now they have a dual thing, but all of the feast days and all of the celebrations or understandings within the cycle of time are based on the calendar of the moon as the cycles of time. And so this idea of cycle of time became blew me away when I started looking into that, and I don't even remember if I talked about it, but how did that happen? How did these guys out in the middle of nowhere decide that a week was 7 days? If anybody has any contrary information or that contradicts this, please say, because I didn't study this to the nth degree, but it just, from just looking at it.
I don't, but when I was reading, star maps.
Francis Ralston,
and how, at least what she discovered, that the star maps were the same in different cultures.
Yeah, I mean,
that's right. That's another thing that fascinates me.
Yeah, this was long before I found that book. Whoever got that book for me, I guess it was Bloom, wasn't it?
Mazarov? Yeah, I'm not sure.
I tried everywhere to find that book, and I couldn't, and Bloom found it. Anyhow, another interesting thing is that the cycles of time for what the Jews consider the beginning, you know, their year is 57 something or other now, was not the creation of the world. It was when God breathed unto man, unto Adam. And then so it was about 2,000 years after that Abraham came on the scene. Then it was 2,000 years after that Christ came on the scene. Now it's, well anyway, that so the idea of all these idiotic arguments about the conservative Christians saying that the Earth is only 6,000 years old or whatever it is. It's just silly.
Ancient man thought that the Earth was the center of the universe and that everything revolved around the Earth.
Ancient man except the Jews.
Well, hold on. So every calendar was a calendar based upon the stars revolving around the Earth. It was when it was discovered at some point in time that the universe revolved around the sun that they went to a calendar of the sun rather than the moon. And the only reason they did the moon is because it was closest to us. And the reason there's a difference between a lunar calendar and a solar calendar is because the Earth and the moon obviously are different distances from the sun. But so there's different mechanisms, things going on there.
But I looked that up. It was only the Western cultures, European cultures, that did that.
European cultures did what? It was the Greeks who decided that the universe revolved around the sun.
No, I know, but it was the European culture. I don't remember which one.
Well, until Columbus sailed, they thought it was flat. I mean, you know.
Well, some people did,
right?
Right, but the European cultures are what changed. When they saw that the universe wasn't revolving around the Earth.
There wasn't much of a Western civilization then, was there?
Well, there was an Asian civilization.
Well, it's more east. Well, I don't know.
Yeah, but anyway, I'm just...
I understand.
We tend to look at history through the eyes of our native cultures or cultures. And anyhow, I don't know, I can start talking about that. Genesis 6. We're talking about innocence and what happened. We studied yesterday the parable of Christ that in Matthew 21 that essentially wiped out the earth or the human race. But going back before, he was first tested in innocency, then the fall. Then there was something happened without any law. And then go to Genesis 6. And it came to pass when men began to multiply in the face of the earth, and daughters were born unto them, that the sons of God saw the daughters of men that they were fair, and they took them wives of all which they chose. That's an incredible statement.
Wouldn't fly today.
Huh?
Said it wouldn't fly today.
Yeah. Well, the word wives there doesn't really mean what we mean.
Chose is the one I'm thinking.
Huh?
They chose their wives.
Yeah, yeah.
Like my grandfather said, you chase them until they catch you.
Yeah. But this made me crazy when I first started reading the Bible because where did that come from? All of a sudden, stuck in the narrative, the sons of God thought. They saw the daughters of men and wham. Now, who were these sons of God? And where did they come from? Well, I'm not saying this is doctrine, but it's what I saw when I started studying that there was a universe, a world before Adam that was destroyed. It says every living thing was destroyed. And that was the age of Lucifer. It says that Lucifer was in the garden long before Adam was. And I believe that's where we get all of the different relics of some kind of humanoid. Were these guys, these beings, and they produced giants, and there were giants in the land. Have you ever looked into the giant thing? They found skeletons of men 10 foot tall. There's a program right now on the History Channel, The Search for Giants. And they found references all through history of men 8, 9 feet tall, and they found skeletons that referenced that. I noticed that a smirk is on somebody's face, but that, you know, I'm just telling you what I believe. I'm not saying this is a doctrine, it's just what I believe. Now, what does this have to do with anything? Well, I believe that the reason, we'll continue reading now. In verse 3, and the Lord said, my spirit shall not always strive with man, for that he also is flesh. Yet the days shall be 120 years, his days. And there were giants in the earth in those days. And also after that, when the sons of God came unto the daughters of men, and they had children, to them the same became mighty men which were of old, men of renown. And God saw the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only continuously evil. This is what it says in Hebrew, was not evil continuously. And it repented the Lord that he had made man on earth, and it grieved him at his heart. And the Lord said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast and the creeping thing and the fowls of the air, for it repenteth me that I have made them. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. Now the reason he found grace, according to the ancients, is that he and the people on that went into the ark had not mixed. So it was, they were protecting, God was protecting the seed of Adam. And so when they went into the ark, it was only those of the seed of Adam instead of the seed of this, whatever the mixed race was. Now again, this is not just me. There's many, many references to this. And these are the generations of Noah. Noah was a just man and perfect in his generation. And Noah walked with God. And Noah begat three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. The earth also was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. And God looked upon the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted his way into the earth. And the Lord God said unto Noah, the end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them. And behold, I will destroy them with the earth. Make thee an ark, etc., etc. So here we have what happened. We had man was created in innocence, and we had flood. Then it went with a period without any law whatsoever. Let me back up. It was created in innocence without in innocence. Then we had the fall. Then he was without any law whatsoever. And then we had the flood. Again, at every point of this, we've gone through this many times. At every point, there was the potential for man to be perfected by becoming as that child, by seeing the mystery of God, by seeing Christ. Then go on down to chapter 9 of Genesis, verse 1. Now, man is going to be tested with the restraints of human authority. And this is what this is about. And God blessed Noah and his sons and said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. And the fear of you and the dread of you shall be upon every beast of the earth, and upon every fowl of the air, upon all that moveth upon the earth, and upon all the fishes of the sea. Into your hand are they delivered. every moving thing that liveth shall be meat or food for you. Even as the green herb have I given you all things. But flesh with the life thereof, which is the blood thereof, you shall not eat. And surely your blood of your lives will I require. At the hand of every beast will I require it, and at the hand of man. At the hand of every man's brother will I require the life of man. Whoso sheddeth man's blood by man shall his blood be shed. For in the image of God made he man. So that's now we have the restraints of human authority. And then what happened? Again, massive idolatry. Then finally, in verse 12, God selects one family. He selected Abraham. Now, the reason I believe that he selected Abraham was, as far as anything that is written anywhere, Abraham was the first person, first being to define truth, which is critical to integrity. It's absolutely silly to give any importance whatsoever to anything that is not true. Now, what does that mean? It means that if you give breath to anything in time and space that changes with time, place, or circumstance, then that has become your idolatry instead of worshiping God. Now, does everybody understand that or disagree with me or agree?
I don't disagree.
There's only three monotheistic religions in the world. There was a fourth for a brief time in Egypt. And Abraham was the one that influenced all of them and defined the beginnings of all of them. Why? How could he, this one man, be the author of three monotheistic religions, or actually have four? The one was, I can't even remember the Pharaoh's name, but he saw God. He saw Abraham, he saw Christ. And they changed everything. And he tried to in one reign of him as Pharaoh. And they killed him and wiped almost any trace of him off the face of the earth. Now, what does this have to do with us today? Is there anything that you're giving importance to? What it means to, if you love, that's what it means. If you love something in time and space, then you're loving it because you're giving importance to it. Importance is the Greek word agapeo, which just means to give importance to. If you give importance to anything in time and space, what does it mean to give importance to? That if it's that which you eat, it's something that gives you sustenance and satisfaction. If anything gives you sustenance and satisfaction in time and space, then that's idolatry. Maybe your children, especially your children, because if you gain sustenance and satisfaction when they do well, and you gain mournful displeasure if they do wrong, then you have been eating their flesh. Now, the same applies if you have spiritual children. All right. So, what happened with this one family? He was Abraham, and this, as you know, his father was Terah. It says Terah was an idol maker. And so because the English translation of it says he was an idol maker, and the commentaries say he built the little idols, he carved them out or made them of stone or glue that people bought. No. He was the high priest under Nimrod, the king. Nimrod had no children. So Abraham was, according to their law, the child of the son of the high priest, if the king had no children, would be the next king. Abraham was to be the next king. And he dismissed it. He dismissed it when he went into the hall, their great worship place, into the main hall, and took the axe handle and broke down every idol. So anyway, then he chose that one family. And they were treated shamefully. If you look at the history of Abraham, it's just... Then he gave the perfect law. Well, then finally he gave the perfect law under Moses. The prophets were, whenever there was idolatry, they framed the prophets.
Are you saying that Abraham's family treated God shamefully?
No, I'm saying the people of the world treated Abraham's family shamefully.
Okay.
And he gave the perfect law. And whenever there was rebellion, he sent prophets, and they were beaten and stoned, some of them killed. And finally, because he looked and saw, it means he looked throughout all of time and space, and he saw that there was no man that could fulfill this, because he had tried all these avenues. And so he sent his son. As you know, he was cast out and crucified. All failed. Now flesh in any way is no more to be tested. It's settled that it was hopeless and lost. When you were baptized, that sealed it, because that was your burial. That meant you agreed that there was nothing about flesh that could possibly be sanctified. And now we have everything that has ever happened, except that hopefully we don't have the sons of God having intercourse with women, but we have everything that all of these things that would have done to all, but they're doing it in the name of our God. All the idolatry, all of the shameful activities, but still done with the name of our God, because they're trying to save flesh. Because flesh, part of your mind is your flesh. And so you have these harebrained ideas and imaginations of your heart. Say, God gave me this. No, he didn't. It's no more to be tested. That's why his disciples are those that continue with him in his test. That has no home in human nature. It's only it has a home when mind is empty. And that's the only time his test begins in you. If you're still dealing with your own crap, you haven't even started the race yet. It's no longer of what we do or are, but who he is. In us, as us, this is the gospel. That's a settled thing that Man was lost, hopeless, not redeemable after they killed his son. Now you are called to do one thing, to profess the worthlessness of the flesh to your world. This is in contrast to all religions, philosophies, economics, science, sociology, psychology, any form of thought. All, because all of those are either actual or real, I mean, are imagined attempts to improve God, improve man. Only people of the way understand the cosmic mystery of Christ in us, the only hope of glory. There is one alone. There is no other. He searched, and he searched throughout all of time and space, and there was no man. I'm not interested right now if you're living this in your life, but I am interested if you have any questions or don't understand it, because that is the basis of everything I teach, what I just said this morning. It's settled. Man is lost and hopeless. And the only thing you're called to profess by your words and by your life is that worthlessness of the flesh. Amen?
Amen.
What? We have to go through this dance.
I'm not dancing today.
You're not dancing? You're not going to talk?
Moment, please.
Remember what I've said so often. Your words are more important than mine. Anybody else? Jeff, you understand?
Perfect.
It's not about you. It's about you gone.
I understand my imperfect perfection.
Those are contradictions in terms. All right, take it big guy.